A couple of rising economies in Asia are working together to compete with the world's top dogs.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao is in India today, continuing a trade mission there, agreeing on a target of $100 billion in trade between the Asian powers within the next 5 years. The BBC's Sanjoy Majumber is in New Delhi and joins us with the latest. Hi, Sanjoy.
Hello.
What have these two countries been talking about on this trade visit?
Well, primarily business. They've agreed to increase their already considerable trade relationship, aiming to cross about $100 billion by 2015. And they've also been trying to talk about outstanding political differences.
How likely is it that these two economies, these are pretty big economies, could combine their strength and compete with the United States?
It's something I think they both recognize and are working towards. They have very complementary strengths. Chinese are leaders in manufacturing. Indians, of course, in services and IT and back office applications. And together they can make a formidable team. And already we've seen them come together on a number of issues around the world, world trade talks and climate change, for instance.
Relations between China and India haven't always been that good, Sanjoy. What are some stumbling blocks to those two getting together?
A number of issues, a long, bitter border row, which has yet to be resolved. The Chinese don't like the presence of the Dalai Lama, the Tibetan spiritual leader in India. And of course, the two countries are competing regionally to become regional powers, which in some ways pits them against each other.
The BBC's Sanjoy Majumder in New Delhi. Sanjoy, thanks.
Okay.
A little farther west, more worker protests in Greece, more ratings downgrades all across Europe. Apparently, the European debt crisis hasn't reached its apex, and leaders across the continent today are grappling with renewed fears of dominoing debt. From London, reporter Anne-Marie McNerney has more.
After a year of multi-billion-dollar bailouts for Greece and Ireland, Europe is in gridlock again. EU leaders are meeting in Brussels to come up with a new way of rescuing countries in debt. The meeting comes as Spain faces investors. The country is selling its debt today, and the market's appetite could provide a good test of whether Europe is out of the woods or back in the thick of it. Investors are debating whether the future of the eurozone is at risk.
I don't think that this is the crisis that's going to blow the eurozone apart, but I don't think that they've resolved the problem. They've merely kicked it a little bit further into the long grass.
Andrew Hilton is an economist at the Centre for the Study of Financial Innovation.
It affects the United States in that the European Union is its biggest trading partner. To see the euro under pressure means that the dollar is going to be under pressure the other way.
Setting up a permanent system for handling crises after 2013 is one of the options being considered at today's summit. But how that system will work is still unclear. In London, I'm Anne-Marie McNerney for Marketplace.
All the talk of European debt continues to weigh on global stock markets. European markets are flat at the moment, down ever so slightly. Asian stocks didn't go very far today either. Credit card companies reported fewer people were late with their payments in November, but shares of big banks such as Citigroup fell. Stocks lost ground yesterday. The S&P and NASDAQ slid about 0.5%. The Dow gave back 19 points to close at 11,457.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. By the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio.
Google is letting the ideas flow from its Northern California campus. Engineers there are working on self-steering cars, electric power distribution, and of course, smartphone applications. But while those initiatives may end up benefiting the planet, it's unclear whether they'll benefit Google and its shareholders. From Silicon Valley, Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
When it comes to innovation, Google is probably best known for its 20% policy. All engineers at the company get to spend 20% of their time working on their own projects. While the 20% plan generates lots of positive press and keeps many Google engineers happy, Chris Trimble at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth is a critic. First, he says it's incredibly expensive.
Second, this is a policy that spreads those resources thinly and broadly and indiscriminately. And third, that just can't generate projects of any appreciable scale. If it's anything bigger than what a few people can handle in their spare time, it's too big.
And in the past year, there's been some evidence Google's founders and top executives have grown impatient with this approach. Late last year, they launched a lab within Google. Its explicit purpose is to create new technologies that could change the world. Insiders call it Google X. It was this lab that created Google's now famous self-driving car. Judy Estrin is a serial entrepreneur and author of Closing the Innovation Gap. She thinks it's exactly these kinds of big bets on new research and technology that the country needs. She says Google's leaders get that.
Between Eric Schmidt's background, Sergey and Larry's background, they all come from backgrounds where they have a deep understanding of the need for research.
But Estrin says the biggest challenge in corporate research is figuring out how to profit from it.
What do you do with it? How do you monetize it? Do I spin out a company?
After all, it was Bell Labs research that led to the microchip. But today, Intel dominates that business. And while Xerox PARC built the first personal computer, it was Apple and Microsoft that made billions. So now that Google's creating wonders like self-driving cars, its executives need to ensure that the shareholders who paid for this research will actually profit from it. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And finally, the Center for Science in the Public Interest has filed a lawsuit against McDonald's. The consumer advocacy group says the fast food giant uses deceptive advertising to woo children into its restaurants. Things like toys and its Happy Meals that drive kids to pester parents to go to Mickey D's where they eat high-fat, high-sodium food. What's next to entice the kids? A clown for a spokesman? I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
So here are some ideas to improve worker productivity. How about naps at the office or sports television breaks every hour? Sounds crazy, but it works.
What for sure we've seen are the different divisions of the company working together in a way that they never had before.
I'm Kai Rizdal, breaking bad office habits from the top down, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.